the Ohio State University, 46-33. Only 8 teams participated in that tournament. The quote of the day is from director Quentin Tarantino, who is 56 today. "Movies are my religion and God is my patron. When I make a movie, I want it to be everything to me, like I would die for it."
Now it's time for independent green news, politics, analysis, and snark. It's the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen of bradblog.com.
It's Tuesday, March 26, 2019.
We've already had 40-plus river gauges that have hit record levels just in this early part of the flood season.
As record floods move south from the Midwest, NOAA warns of much more to come.
It wasn't just one, but 2 very scary, very dangerous crises that happened back to back.
Big new problems after major chemical fire in Houston. Humanitarian crisis in Africa amid Cyclone Idai's widespread devastation, plus...
America is back in the nuclear energy industry, folks. We are back.
Trump administration gives troubled Georgia nuclear plant billions more in taxpayer loan guarantees.
Of course they do. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have the goal of making America nuclear cool again.
How about just the goal to learn how to pronounce nuclear? Rick Perry, this is your Green News Report.
There is no cleaner source than nuclear energy.
I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, there is way more going on in your Green News Report here than I can possibly keep track of. I hope you can.
I'll try.
Good luck.
First up, as we go to air, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is planning to hold a stunt vote on the Democrats' Green New Deal resolution on Tuesday. McConnell hopes the procedural vote will put Democrats in a tough spot, especially those running for president in 2020. Senate Democrats are likely to vote present to protest what they call a nakedly political maneuver.
What makes it nakedly political?
Because there's no actual legislation to vote on. He's just trying to make them look bad.
Well, that's not hard.
In southern Africa, the death toll from powerful Cyclone Idai has risen above 750 in Mozambique and is expected to rise. 10 days after the storm, the floods are visible from space and cover more than 800 square miles. Aid workers are struggling to prevent an outbreak of cholera. The United Nations called the storm one of the worst weather-related disasters ever recorded in the southern hemisphere.
What's the best weather-related disaster?
In Texas, at the site of that massive petrochemical fire that burned for days in Houston, a containment wall breach at the facility on Friday reignited the fire and sent toxic chemicals into the Houston Ship Channel, forcing partial closure, stranding more than 30 ships as of airtime. The state of Texas is now suing the company for violating state clean air laws. Officials say air quality isn't hazardous, but nearby residents have reported rashes, headaches, breathing problems, and vomiting.
Oh, no problem there. And of course, you know, if Texas is actually suing a company for pollution, it must be really bad.
In the upper Midwest, record flooding has now caused more than $3 billion in damages as it heads south to the Gulf of Mexico. The flooding has impaired treatment of drinking water supplies in Kansas City. In Mississippi, they're already dealing with an existing flood crisis from torrential rains earlier this month. The documented increase in the frequency of these major flood events is proving too much for some victims, as residents told KMTV in Omaha.
We're going to leave. I can't live here. I can't do this again next year.
But the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration warns it could just be a preview of potentially historic, widespread flooding that could affect as many as 200 million Americans this spring, with 13 million at risk of major inundation through May. NOAA blames the high risk on warm spring temperatures arriving early, rapidly melting heavy snow in the Midwest after the wettest winter in U.S. history.
And why would those warm spring temperatures be arriving early?
Well, NOAA scientists scientists have an answer for that. They say the fingerprints of climate change are on these floods.
Huh.
They cited the documented increase in extreme heavy rainfall events over the last 60 years, especially in the Midwest and Northeast, and they say it's consistent with what they expect from global warming. They also warned that the extra rain will bring more fertilizer runoff from the Mississippi River watershed to the Gulf of Mexico and is likely to trigger an even bigger dead zone than usual in the Gulf this summer. Finally, the Trump administration in its 2020 budget proposal called for slashing renewable energy and development. But late last week, the administration doubled down on Georgia's troubled Vogtle nuclear power plant expansion. They tacked on $4 billion in new additional federal loan guarantees for a grand total of $12 billion in overall assistance for a plant that is 11 years behind schedule and many, many billions over budget. Here's Trump Energy Secretary Rick Perry.
Ladies and gentlemen, look around you. This is the real New Green Deal. That's what we're looking at here, folks. This is America. This is what we can do together.
Why does it sound like Rick Perry has a fake Texas accent? By the way, remember that solar company, Solyndra, that Fox News and the Republicans were so mad that Obama gave $500 million in federal loan guarantees to?
Oh, yes.
Well, by my math here, it sounds like this nuclear company has received 24 times more than Solyndra did.
And that's Republicans' idea of the real new Green Deal.
Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I was green before green was a thing.
Last night, Facebook announced that it will ban white nationalism and white separatism on Facebook and Instagram. It will also begin directing users who try to post content from far-right ideologies to a nonprofit that helps people leave hate groups. Though Facebook banned white supremacy after the Charlottesville protests in August of 2017, it explicitly allowed white nationalism and white separatism. The new policy was unveiled after civil rights groups and historians argued that there is no difference between those three ideologies. Beginning next week, all content that includes explicit praise, support, or representation of white nationalism or separatism will be banned on Facebook.
The man who killed Heather Heyer with his car in Charlottesville, Virginia, pled guilty to hate crimes in federal court today. James Alex Fields of Ohio also injured 35 people when he accelerated his vehicle into a group during one of the most notorious race riots in modern history. He was found guilty of 29 out of 30 counts against him, but his plea agreement spared him the death penalty. Fields' attorneys had argued that he accelerated into the crowd because he was afraid. The young woman's killing on August 12, 2017, catapulted the Unite the Right movement into the public consciousness.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There were some tense moments in a U.S. House committee hearing Tuesday in Washington as lawmakers focused on legislation to protect the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from development. Among those to testify for its protection were Gwich'in people from interior Alaska who say they have a cultural and spiritual connection to the land and caribou, adding development would negatively impact their way of life. Alaska Representative Don Young told his colleagues otherwise.
I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, I want to believe the people, not the Gwich'in, because they're not the people. They're 400 miles away. I'm talking to the Inuits that live there. That's their land. It has always been their land. And to totally ignore them and any mention of their occupancy is wrong in this report, and including in your written statement. It's wrong. These are the Alaskan natives directly impacted, not the Gwich'in. That's my tribe. My wife was Gwich'in. My daughters are Gwich'in. We have a few Gwich'in that make a living out of this. By promoting something that's wrong, by saying we want to take away from their brothers, that's wrong. You've divided two tribes.
Young went on to say the Gwich'in are not the natives directly affected, but the Inupiat who see drilling as an opportunity.
Listen to the people who live there. If not, you're not representatives at all. That's all I ask you to do. Listen to them. Hear what they say. Not someone who's living in Fairbanks. not someone that has not killed a caribou in 10 years and probably doesn't have a license. That's wrong. Think about that when you say we want to save the culture. Save the culture of the people, not those that are foreigners or living away from the area.
Gwich'in leader Sam Alexander countered back.
And I'd like to make something very, very clear to this audience and to everybody out there that's listening. And that's Mr. Don Young does not represent the Gwich'in. He does not represent the Gwich'in in our voice.
I represent Alaska. I don't represent you.
He might have a wife. You don't represent the Gwich'in. I'm here. I am here because the elders have sent me to be here. So I want to be clear on that. This is the question I'll answer,
though. Mention the names of people.
I will. Members. Let us be clear on that.
Those who testified against the bill and in support of development urged lawmakers to include the voices of people from Kaktovik, the only native village in the area of planned development. They see oil drilling as a means of creating jobs and as an economic boost. An Alaska Native group says Tuesday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the case Sturgeon versus Frost is a victory for moose hunter John Sturgeon. The ruling found state rivers are basically exempt from National Park Service authority. The Alaska Federation of Natives says the decision upheld provisions in Katie John cases, which back subsistence, calling it a victory for all subsistence users. Legislation to grant federal recognition to the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians in Montana passed the U.S. House this week. The bill restores federal status and allows the tribe to purchase 200 acres of land for its reservation. It also makes the Little Shell eligible for federal resources. The tribe has been fighting for the status for years, petitioning the federal government in the 1930s and 40s for a formal reservation and to be allowed to organize under federal law. Tribal leaders are hoping for support in the Senate. Native advocate and university student Marita Growing Thunder is preparing for an 80-mile walk for the third year in a row for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. She'll begin the walk across the Flathead Reservation in Montana Thursday, ending it on the southern border of the reservation next week, hoping to raise awareness of cases in the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is a recovering optimist.
I should have known better. Robert Mueller is a rich Republican. Who better to bar access to information than Bush's former fixer? Nancy Pelosi is a rich Democrat who's more worried about Ocasio-Cortez and other progressives than she is Trump or McConnell. Trump often seems confused, erratic, self-contradictory. That's because he's a puppet with several puppeteers. Putin, Israel, Deutsche Bank, Fox News, Saudi Arabia, and we're entangled in that world with him, unstrung. How do we save God? How do we stop suicides? Or is the world too unsustainably crazy a place? Overcrowded, diminished resources, climate lashing out. The terrible can happen any time. Gunshot, cancer, overdose, flooding. But they're not happening now. And the sun will soon be shining. You'll go somewhere and feel joy. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
An expose in the German newspaper Bild this week has prompted the owners of the Krispy Kreme brand to apologize for their family's Nazi past. The Ryman family owns a company called Jab Holdings. Under the direction of Albert Ryman Sr. and Albert Ryman Jr., during World War II, forced Russian civilians and French prisoners of war into a slave-like factory system, making chemical ingredients for the food industry. They also made Nazi weapons. Now, Jab Holdings says they will donate $11 million to charity as a way to try to make it right. The Ryman Family Company has large stakes in iconic chains and brands, including Panera Bread, Krispy Kreme Donuts, Einstein Brothers, Noah's New York Bagels, Manhattan Bagel, Pete's Coffee, Stumptown Coffee, Intelligentsia, Mucinex, Woolite, and Durex Condoms. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Emily Gresham Beamer. And our engineer is David Kesters. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Emily Gresham Beamer. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge. At 9, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's The Heather McCoy Show. At 11, Book Waves with host Richard Wolinski talks to Trina Robbins, the first woman to draw Wonder Woman and a legend in underground comics, about her memoir, Last Girl Standing, and other recent books. Then at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, conversations with pioneering animators and comic artists. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click the button marked Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The Post Carbon Institute in Corvallis educates society about the dangers of carbon consumption. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Executive Director Asher Miller today to find out more about their online event next week featuring Indigenous activists Nick Telson of the NDN Collective, Climate Disobedience Center founder Tim Christopher, and Nevada State Assemblywoman Sarah Peters.
We help people understand and respond to what we call the interrelated sustainability crises of the 21st century. And that basically means, you know, how do climate change and economic inequality and issues with our food system and water and our energy all interrelate, and what do we do about it?
And you have these interesting areas of focus: community resilience, energy transition, and limits to growth. Can you talk about those? I'm just so interested in your work.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, essentially, in our view, we've been on, we've been like people who won the lottery for the last couple hundred years. We found fossil fuels and we went crazy for a little while. And with that abundance of energy, we sort of built an industrial world, and now we're kind of dependent on it. And we've discovered that there's a lot of consequences to that dependence. So we're dealing with climate change as the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but there are other environmental issues related. And we're also finding that the benefits of kind of that free-for-all that we've been on for a while haven't been distributed equally. Now we've got to sort of pay the bills of that party that we've been running for the last couple hundred years. And that means we have to really fundamentally shift the way that we live on this planet, and that includes transitioning the sources of energy that we use. Right now, we're about 85% of our energy comes from fossil fuels, and we're also using about 2,500, percent more energy than we did 150 or so years ago. It means that we can't, in our view, continue to grow our consumption and the number of people that we have on this planet indefinitely, because we live on a finite planet.
What do you actually do? I mean, what do you get people to come and do with you?
Well, for us, it begins with understanding the challenges that we face, because we see these issues related, as I mentioned, to energy and food and climate and water and the economy and inequality. All these things are all interrelated, and we have to address them at the source. And so it begins with understanding. really the challenge that we face. And as you mentioned, community resilience is sort of the thing that we try to encourage people to engage in, not as the only strategy, but as a key one that I think a lot of other organizations aren't, like environmental organizations, aren't promoting quite as much. So while we need to engage politically, we need to do everything that we possibly can to keep fossil fuels in the ground, we also have to build the resilience of our communities, because there is a lot of change that's coming. There's, as I mentioned earlier, there's kind of the bills due for the bonanza that we've been on for a while. So how do we work together in our communities to adapt and be more resilient in the face of climate change and changes in our economic system and as a result of the energy transition?
All right, you have an event coming up April 3rd. What is it about and how does it work?
Yeah, so we wanted to talk to folks about what do you do when you understand the true nature of the climate crisis and these other issues that we're talking about. I mean, it's the first question, obviously, I think that comes to everyone's mind, and it's easy to feel paralyzed or feel like there's so many things that need to be done, people don't really know what's the best path for them to engage. And I think the answer to that is going to be different for different people, but what we wanted to do with this event was provide people with some inspiration and some practical guidance from some folks that have been operating in three different spheres that we feel like are really key to engage in. One of them is trying to keep fossil fuels in the ground, and particularly opposing investment in new fossil fuel infrastructure. So we have invited Tim DeChristopher to come and talk about climate disobedience. Tim is someone who actually risked his own freedom and went to federal prison for 2 years by bidding on these leases for oil and gas drilling on federal lands, and now has been working with others to support folks who are doing direct action in civil disobedience. We're also speaking with someone who decided that she wanted to actually run for public office because of her concerns about climate change. Her name is Sarah Peters, and she's been elected to the Assembly in the state of Nevada. She's a young mother who's an environmental engineer, very concerned about the future for her kids and her community. And obviously, people need to be engaging politically. What we wanted to do was also remind folks that it's not just voting. You know, it could be that we ourselves run for office and take on that leadership role as well. And then the last person we've invited to speak is a person named Nick Tilson, who is from South Dakota, from the Oglala Dakota Nation, who is going to talk to us about the work that he's been doing for the last decade to try to build the resilience and sustainability and strength of his local community on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and now is working with tribal nations all across the country to do the same thing.
So, but what will we be doing? This is an online event. So we're going to your website and we're watching lectures. How does it work? I'm not sure how many times I've seen like full online events. So I'm just like, how are you orchestrating it? What's going to happen?
Yeah, well, it's 90 minutes. It's taking place April 3rd. For folks who want to check it out, they just need to go to postcarbon.org/meaningfulaction. And over 90 minutes, we're going to be having kind of a free-form conversation with the three of them. We're going to be providing them with an opportunity to share their stories. And then we're going to provide those who are participating live in the conversation to be able to ask questions and to share their thoughts as well. What we really want to do with this is not just provide people with some inspiration, but I think as Nick and Sarah and Tim would all say, you know, all of us not only need to take action, we can take action. And so we want to hopefully provide people with inspiration and some practical guidance for how they could sort of answer that question, you know, the question of what do I do now that I understand how severe the climate crisis is.
All right. What other events does the Post Carbon Institute have coming up?
Oh, we have our fellows who go sort of on the road and do different things in different communities. People can check out our events calendar on our website. Sort of varies. We do these online events every once in a while. So you guys, I think if you're interested, should sign up for our newsletter and you can get notified. And the last thing I would suggest is for folks to check out resilience.org, which is our website where we publish about a half a dozen new articles every day that are, you know, exploring these different challenges, but also talking about concrete things that people are doing all around the world to respond to them.
And I saw something on your website today that was referencing peak oil, which I don't hear very many people talk about anymore, and yet we're still facing it, I think. And it's also interesting because, in general, I don't hear enough analysis, I think, or just information about climate change, global warming, stuff like that in the mainstream. What is your take on the best places for our listeners to find more information besides your website, which we already said is resilience.org? Are there other good places people can get strong information that can help them be better informed about these issues?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that we are seeing more coverage about climate change, and that's simply being driven by the fact that the climate around us is changing. We're seeing these, you know, severe weather events that have a correlation to the planet warming. In terms of, you know, places to go to understand kind of the interrelationships between these things. I'm biased here, but I do think that resilience.org is a place to go to sort of get a broader sense of these things. There are other organizations that we work with that we would encourage for folks to check out. So for people who are interested in learning about how they can organize locally, I would suggest that they go check out the Transition Network, and that's transitionnetwork.org. That's an international network of grassroots groups that are trying to transition their communities away from fossil fuels. There are groups that are working on the transition to a new economy, so they could check out the New Economy Coalition is another great website. And then there's a group called Shareable. And if you go to shareable.net, they have a lot of resources for folks about how to help build kind of the sharing economy in their local communities.
Ashir, what is the most important thing people should know about your work at the Post Carbon Institute?
I would say it's getting a true understanding about our dependence not only on fossil fuels, but on energy in general. Energy is the driving force of literally everything. Nothing happens without it. And it's something that we all take for granted. If we can learn to really see and kind of lift the veil over our eyes about the way that energy flows through every aspect of our lives, particularly our dependence on fossil fuels, it would lead us, I think, to make much wiser choices. And that starts with conserving energy and thinking really differently about where we get our food, the sources of energy that we have, our consumption of things, consumerism in general. So start by trying to get energy literate, and then from there start looking at the connections between all of these different issues I think a lot of your listeners are particularly concerned about. You know, it does relate to who we elect, you know, to become the next president of the United States or local representatives. It does relate to issues around economic inequality and other things that feel top of mind for people these days.
Ashir Miller, Post Carbon Institute, thank you so much for being on the news tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
It is 5:58 p.m., and next up, you're listening to the KBOO Youth Collective.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides narrative, difference between fascist and Antifa movements in the Trump era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m., at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky, This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is looking for a grant writer to join our team. We are seeking someone with a proven track record in writing successful, complex proposals for diverse sources of grant funding. Previous experience working in the philanthropic landscape of the Portland metro area is preferred, and previous experiences working with community media organizations and with communities of color are A+. This is a one-year contract position for a total of 200 hours at $25 an hour, and the grant writer will work closely with the KBOO development director. For more information, go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the KBOO is hiring link on the right side of the home page.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
Hello, I'm Virgil, and you're listening to the KBOO Youth Collective. First up, we have a piece by yours truly about, well, I think I...